What?
My name is...
What?
My name is...
What?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
What?
My name is...
What?
My name is... Stone Cold Steve Austin.
What?
My name is...
What?
My name is...
What?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
What?
My name is...
What?
My name is...
What?
My name is... Stone Cold Steve Austin.
What?
Okay, right about now, you're probably asking yourself, what the hell am I listening to? See, yours truly, Don Tony, doesn't throw a lot of things out. And luckily, I found one of my old external hard drives that goes back to like 2002. And back in the day, during the Attitude Era, I used to mess around and mix songs, put wrestling tidbits in it and sound bites. And I got some wacky stuff that I made way back when. You got to remember, I did a hotline from 1998 until around 2005-ish. So recently finding this old hard drive, there's a lot of vintage gems that are just wacky shit that I used to do back in the day. But that creation that you heard, I actually made that. Got to be 16, 17 years ago. So with that said, I want to welcome everyone to This Week in Wrestling History. I guess you could call this officially episode 2. Now, a lot of you out there are probably also saying, wait a minute, you've been doing these history segments since probably the summertime of 2017. What do you mean episode 2? Well, just like The Simpsons. Back in the late 80s, when they were featured on the Tracy Ullman show and then branched out into their own series because it was so popular, yours truly has decided to do the same with This Week in Wrestling History. Up until last week, I have been always attaching these segments to the end of the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show episodes. But starting today, going forward, these will be its own download, its own file, its own episode. And the reason why we're doing that is because, number one, a lot of you have asked for that. And another reason people have said as well is that it keeps the size of the files down a little bit more. Don Tony and Kevin Castle show, one separate file. This Week in Wrestling History, one separate file. So going forward, this will be its own entity. And because of that, I could spend a little bit extra time. I could put some extra promos. You got to remember, when you have 60 to 90 minutes of the DTKC show in the bag and you add this to it, it could turn into a 2.5, 3, 3.5 hour download. Especially you throw in a pay-per-view recap on top of that. There were some episodes that were 4-hour downloads. And trust me, I know a lot of you out there love these 4-hour downloads. But for some, that's a pretty damn big file to download, especially on a cell phone. So now this will be its own separate entity. And I decided to go with episode 2 is because this technically is the second week in the year for 2018. So I would consider week 1 to be January 1st to January 7th, week 2 January 8th to January 15th, week 3 January 6th, and so on. So since this episode covers the period of January 8th to the 15th, it's the second week of the year, therefore episode 2. That's how we're going to document these going forward. Now, what I will do is episode 1, which took place last week, I will recreate that file. This way, if anybody wants to keep a library of these episodes going forward, you obviously have an episode 1. Because you know what's going to happen. Down the line, people are going to be like, where's episode 1? So there you go. Anyway, I already recorded This Week in Wrestling History. I just added this little intro at the beginning to let you all know that this will be its own separate entity going forward. As far as how the show is done with the sound clips and everything else, nothing is going to change. But I really hope you enjoy it. And please, as always, send your feedback. Tell me what you like about it, what you don't like about it. Any requests, anything you want featured in it that I'm not doing now, send it in. I listen to all feedback. With that said, enjoy This Week in Wrestling History. One of the things CM Punk will always be known for in the WWE is the pipe bomb that he cut about 6 years ago in WWE. Well, it was This Week in History, 5 years ago, that CM Punk and The Rock closed out Monday Night Raw with an almost 30-minute audio exchange. And I watched it again for the first time since it aired. And I got to be honest with you. in a hole, yeah, we could get past The Rock getting the fans to chant Cookie Puss to CM Punk. But I actually enjoyed this promo by CM Punk more than the Pipe Bomb. And trust me, I was a huge fan of the Pipe Bomb promo. So for those that may have forgot about this exchange between The Rock and CM Punk 5 years ago this week, or maybe you're a new listener, newer wrestling fan, never heard it, I will play it in its entirety later on. But first, the incidentals. What's up, everyone? This week in wrestling history, I am Don Tony. As always, I want to thank you very much for listening. And once again, thank you all for all of the feedback, opinions, comments, everything related to this segment. The private messages, the emails. I mean, I really value everybody's feedback, not only with this, but with anything that we do. Never feel embarrassed to express your opinions on topics being discussed, direction of the show, things you like, dislike. Always speak up. Never, ever bash you. If you're a supporter of the show and you don't like something, speak up. But as far as this segment, I got to tell you, the response has been so overwhelming to the point now that I am seriously considering having this as a separate download on its own for everybody each week. Now, as far as preparing the show and doing all the work, that's not going to change. But we've always had it attached to the Don Tony Kevin Castle Show episode. But quite a few of you have said, hey, I would love this as a separate download. It's worth its own little file. So I know it's just semantics when you think about it. But right now on my Twitter, at Don Tony D, you can vote if you want these segments to still be attached to the Monday downloads for the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show, or do you want this as a separate episode entirely? So if it becomes a separate episode, maybe I'll spend a little bit extra time on it. You know, like I said, the CM Punk Rock promo is going to be about 26 minutes long. So obviously this week's segment is going to be a little bit longer than usual. But let's get into it, shall we? This week we cover the time period of January 9th through January 15th. And the first segment today has audio attached to it. I think there's 5 or 6 audio clips this week. But we remember in 1982, the infamous feud between Jerry the King Lawler and Andy Kaufman. We remember David Letterman segments, everything that happened in Memphis, the infamous promos. This is soap, soap. Fucking loved Andy Kaufman. Well, in 1983, Nick Bockwinkel took on Jerry the King Lawler for the vacated AWA World Heavyweight title. And the title was vacated following a match that those two had back on December 27th. So they had a rematch to determine who was going to win the belt. And the week before, there was a storyline segment where Jimmy Hart was attacked by Jerry the King Lawler. I think Jimmy Hart may have been, quote unquote, burned. So Jimmy Hart was sitting at ringside during this match, and there was a masked wrestler by the name of No Mask. So here's the closing moments of how everything went down.
Round one, but Bockwinkel slips out of it. And Hart about to have a fit in the corner with Dundee right next to him. Billy grabbed his shoulder and held him down. Boy, double right hands, and Bockwinkel and Lawler, who were both through the vicious 10 minutes of it, both stunned. They hit the deck hard, and Lawler and Hart up out of the chair gets away from Dundee. Dundee grabs him by the waist while Lawler turns Bockwinkel over. He's got him. But the referee trying to get Hart back from the ropes, and Lawler still got him covered. He can't get a pin. Lawler goes over and blasts Hart loose. What is this? Here is Jimmy Hart on here. And Jerry Lawler. We are dumbfounded with Jimmy Hart with no mask. And Lawler was rolled up 1, 2, 3. And the winner is Nick Bockwinkel in 11:22. The world heavyweight title goes to him. I don't believe it. I can't understand it. What is this? Andy Kaufman, under the guise.
Look at that, Russell! Come here, Andy! Come here, Andy!
We got the brains, baby! We got the brains!
What is this kind of a thing?
He who laughs the loudest, baby!
Lawler, I got you! You thought you saw the last of me! I'll keep coming till you end up in the hospital!
Miami, look at this, man! Tell him,
I am in the locker room at the Mid-South Coliseum with Andy Kaufman and Jimmy, a TV star Andy Kaufman. I will tell you right now, it is not my idea, but we are interested in finding out what led to the kind of charade that took place that deprived Lawler of the world. Don't tell me it wasn't a charade. Everybody, you came out. Yeah, he lost it out there. Don't you have anything better to do than to run around trying to gig Lawler and bother him?
Jerry Lawler almost tried to break my neck last year. He made a fool out of me. He humiliated me. He put me in the hospital for 3 days in traction. I had to wear a neck brace for 5 months. He did this to Jimmy Hart, broke his arm, okay? And so you say, I don't have anything better to do? I won't stop. I'm not stopping now. Look, it gives me great pleasure to know that I had something to do with helping to prevent Jerry Lawler from having that world title. And I'll tell you, I'm not going to stop now. I won't stop until I find someone who's going to put Jerry Lawler into the hospital just like he did me. And it won't be for any 3 days. It won't be for a week. It'll be for a month, maybe for a year. Jerry Lawler will not want to go back into professional wrestling when I'm through with him, because I'm offering $5,000 to any wrestler that can put him in the hospital. And I'm dead serious about this, ladies and gentlemen. I will not stop until Jerry Lawler is in the hospital.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You just better steer clear of him, because I would expect much out of you.
Who is the smartest manager in professional wrestling? And why am I, like I said, man? Can't you imagine when Lawler saw him over there? He thought he saw Jimmy Hart with a mask on. Then I jumped on the ring. He fainted. Bockwinkel pinned him. Like I said, king, and I use that word loosely. He who laughs last, laughs the loudest.
King. Is that enough? Do we have to listen to me? Andy Kaufman, Jimmy Hart.
A lot of fans of Memphis wrestling, Jerry Lawler, Andy Kaufman, do say that this is one of their favorite storylines of all time, what just went down in 1983. I thought it was brilliant. I loved it. So, 1989, WWF holds its first Royal Rumble on pay-per-view. Now, not their first ever Royal Rumble. It was the first one that they had ever done on pay-per-view. And for those that may have forgot, the winner of the Royal Rumble for this year, Big John Studd. This was the same pay-per-view also where Ultimate Warrior had the memorable pose down with Ravishing Rick Rude, and then Ravishing Rick Rude attacked him with that, I guess, that workout bar that they do to, like, you know, I don't know. I've never used one in him, but it looks like a nightstick, but you use it to work out. But that was an excellent pay-per-view. I just really don't remember all that much Big John Studd winning it. I know he won one. I didn't realize he won the first ever pay-per-view Royal Rumble. 1991, Chris Chavez makes his pro wrestling debut for Larry Sharpe's World Wrestling Alliance in Philadelphia. For those that may not know Chris Chavez by his real name, we know him as Tatanka. 1992, very important moment in the careers of Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty this week as the Rockers officially split up. It was the barbershop segment. Marty Jannetty gets super kicked by Shawn Michaels, then put through the plate glass window. And we know how the careers ended up. But you know what? I think Marty Jannetty should take pride in the fact that he is now actually not only a noun, but he's an adjective in the world of pro wrestling. You don't think about that all that often as far as, you know, an actual person. But how many times over the years have we looked at a different tag team and somebody will say, he's the Jannetty of the group, right? So Marty Jannetty, hey, in these days, is sometimes a couple eggs short of a dozen, but I think he had a pretty damn good career, even though, you know, he's the Jannetty of the group. 1993, WCW presented the Clash of Champions from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Reason why I bring up this event specifically, it was the last one that Jim Ross would call before leaving to go to WWF. Right around this time, Eric Bischoff had taken over for Bill Watts as WCW's executive vice president. And one of the first acts that Eric Bischoff did was to pull Jim Ross from WCW programming. They did not get along all that well. Obviously, time heals most wounds over the years. Hey, look, it was a business decision at the time. It's not for me to agree or disagree with it, but we remember that right around this time, Jim Ross went to WWF and one of his earliest appearances, if not his first, wasn't he wearing the toga? I wonder what he was thinking at the time. You know, coming to WWF, leaving WCW, and he's right there thrown into wearing a toga. You know, Jim Ross wasn't that, like, out of shape. He wasn't massively overweight. It just, everybody looked a little goofy. But hey, you remember the whole theme of the pay-per-view, and I'm sure Jim Ross has talked about it in his book over the years, but that went down this week, 1993. One of the matches from that card, because there were some injuries to some wrestlers who couldn't compete, they actually put Cactus Jack in a tag team with Dustin Rhodes and Sting. And they defeated Barry Windham, Mick Van Vader, and Paul Orndorff in Thunder Cage. So Cactus Jack, babyface, 1993. Also, this week in 1993, very important week for WWF. First, they had an event at the Boston Garden, and the main event was Bret Hart defeating Ric Flair in a 60-minute Ironman match. Bret Hart wins 3-2. And people have reported that this is the first ever Ironman match in WWF history. So I haven't bothered to go confirm that, but there is enough reports going around saying that this is first ever Ironman match. So, hey, you know, we'll see. I'll look into it for everyone. But, you know, most importantly, a few days later, Monday Night Raw debuts from the Manhattan Center in New York City. This week in wrestling history, 25 years ago, Monday Night Raw debuts. You know, I have talked about it over the years. Rob Bartlett, without question, is the worst commentator ever to have a semi-regular job in wrestling. Rob Bartlett was not around all that long. But man, this guy, abysmal, sucked. I would listen to Mike Adamly. And I know it might not be all that appropriate to talk about Mike Adamly like that right now because he has the health issues. But I'm just making out a point that this is how bad Rob Bartlett was. Go watch and listen to early episodes of Monday Night Raw with Rob Bartlett. I don't understand. I mean, I do understand because, you know, it was New York and they were looking for some New York, you know, style to this. But he was terrible. Fucking terrible. Abysmal. And look, Rob Bartlett also worked for Don Imus. So it got some publicity there as well. But man, it was the drizzling shits. You know, little tidbit. You know, I think a lot of fans out there forget the heat that yours truly and our show had with Damian Demento like 7-8 years ago. You remember when we had the Damian Demento Award and we were just criticizing him and he did these YouTube clips, don't call me a fucking jobber. And he like got off the deep end, you know, because he didn't like that people called him a jobber. And we had so much fun with it 7-8 years ago. I think this is actually, you know what? It's more than 7-8 years ago. It's over 10 years ago. But little piece of trivia, and I'm not bringing it up because, you know, we had heat with Damian Demento back then. But Damian Demento is always known as being in a main event for the first ever Monday Night Raw, losing to The Undertaker. Well, do you know that Damian Demento actually wrestled twice that first Monday Night Raw? And he lost both times. Before Raw actually went on the air, Bob Backlund wrestled Damian Demento for the live crowd and defeated Demento. So Demento was a double loser on the first episode of Monday Night Raw. Something tells me that he will not be back for Raw 25. This week in 1994, Raw had its first ever anniversary edition of Monday Night Raw from the Richmond Coliseum in Richmond, Virginia. And one of the biggest upsets in WWF history on this night, 1-2-3 Kid, Marty Jannetty, defeated the Quebecers after a simultaneous Jannetty suplex and a crossbody from the Kid to win the titles. 1995 now. Technically, this took place January 8th in Japan, but here in the States, I technically would have thought it was January 9th, so I'm going to share it with everyone. One of the most infamous fights that Cactus Jack ever had versus Terry Funk in Japan. Brutal, barbed wire, chairs, blood, tables, explosions. It was the IWA Duel of the Wilds in 1995. It was a no-ropes, barbed wire, fire death match. In fact, later on, I'm actually going to play a different Cactus Jack promo that he had cut on WWF TV, I think in 1998 or 1999. I don't remember which year. I'll look it up as we go along. But if you watch the segment on TV, WWF on Raw actually shows clips of this actual match, the IWA Duel of the Wilds, the no ropes, barbed wire, fire death match between those two. It was brutal. If you've never seen it, and you're fans of these two wrestlers and you want to see like an absolute wild hardcore match, go online and check it out because the footage is there. But something that a lot of us never really got to enjoy was the promo that Cactus Jack cut right before the match. Now, I have it. I'm sorry if it sounds a little digitized, but I had to filter out so much noise and interference because the audio I got was from a VHS tape, but I think I did a pretty damn good job of it. And when you listen to this promo, if you're a lifelong ECW fan, the original ECW, and you remember Cactus Jack's promos in ECW, this IWA promo sounds awfully familiar than what he did in ECW. Check it out.
Terry Funk. When we talk about the legends of the sport, there's only two in my book. One man is sitting right here on my shirt, and the other man will look me in the eye across the ring, because Terry Funk, you are what the sport is all about. And tonight, right here, in a barbed wire death match, Cactus Jack will show the world that he, too, is what the sport is all about. Funk, you were my friend. When I needed guidance, I called Terry Funk. When I needed answers, I asked Terry Funk. But when I need to take my place in the sport of professional wrestling with the legends of the business, I show up here and I don't ask Terry Funk anything. I tell him! I say, Terry Funk, no friends anymore! Because tonight, this is my friend. Tonight, fire is my friend. And tonight, danger is the love of my pathetic life. Because Funk, son, it is only when it's at its most dangerous that I'm truly alive. And people say, Cactus, does that mean you're not afraid of anything? And I say, no, it means I'm afraid of everything. But Terry Funk, can't you see? That's what puts the spark in my eye. That's what put the flash in this smile. Because I've got nothing left to lose. You can't take my teeth. They're already gone. You can't take my ear because that's gone too. And Terry Funk, you can't take my heart because it's too big for you to carry. So the whole world will stay unnoticed when I leave Terry Funk draped in pieces of flesh across the barbed wire. The whole world will take notice that there's a new king in town. Onita! It makes me laugh, because where is he? He's not in this gym, no. He took that time and decided to retire. He fought in that million-dollar mind of his. Don't ruin the legend of Onita. Get out before it's too late. So I got a one message for Onita-san. It says, Itsu Demo! Itsu Demo! It means wherever and whatever you want. If you've got the guts, but I know you don't. Because the only man sick enough, the only man mentally deranged enough to want to risk it all and Cactus Jack, it's my hero. See you at match time, Terry. Big bang!
20 years ago this week on Monday Night Raw, I like looking for oddball things that happened in wrestling history when I cover these. And I know it's no big deal, but if you want to see it, get a little grossed out by it. It's the 20-year anniversary that Triple H gave Michael Cole a horrible, disgusting wet willy. Do you know what a wet willy is? You take your finger, your dirty finger, you shove it in your mouth, get a whole bunch of spit on it, and then you stick it in someone's ear. And Triple H did that to Michael Cole 20 years ago this week. That same episode of Monday Night Raw, they teased that in the upcoming weeks, we would find out if Mike Tyson was going to be coming to the WWF and appearing at WrestleMania. Now, as far as the news wire goes, it was this week in wrestling history that WWF and Mike Tyson actually made the deal. He was going to be the special enforcer, WrestleMania. We know how everything went down since, but it was made official this week, and they announced it on TV a couple of weeks later. This same episode of Monday Night Raw, Mark Henry turned heel, joined the Nation of Domination. How it all went down, Mark Henry was in a tag match with Ken Shamrock, taking on The Rock and D'Lo Brown, and Mark Henry turned on his tag partner. They all gave Ken Shamrock the beatdown. Ken Shamrock gets no love whatsoever. None. I've talked about it so many times. WWE treats Ken Shamrock almost on a level as Chris Benoit. I know that sounds insane, but go on YouTube, search TV Trax's channel. Just type in Don Tony, Ken Shamrock. Listen to all the clips that we have brought out about their just lack of any appreciation towards this guy. And he actually did a lot for WWF back then. And, you know, it's up for debate as to why, you know, a lot of people have their, you know, their reasons or what they think it is, but it's just too noticeable, too noticeable. The same episode of Raw checked out a Cactus Jack promo that he cut standing on the football fields at Penn State. Figured I'd share with everyone. Little entertaining, nothing earth-shattering, but you may have forgot it. 1998 Monday Night Raw, Cactus Jack cutting a promo about the New Age Outlaws. Enjoy.
I'm standing out here on the famed fields of Beaver Stadium at Penn State University, a place where many wars have been fought. I like to think I know a thing or two about wars, having been the survivor of many. The greatest warrior I've ever known was a man named Terry Funk, who together we shared a mutual mutilation for well over a year through barbed wire, bombs, blood and guts. And put it so vile and violent that has never before been shown in this country. And after the mutilation was over, a strange thing happened. I felt myself being closer to this man than anyone I'd ever known. So when Cactus Jack found himself in a two-on-one situation, well, the answer was clear. One phone call to Terry Funk. And the fact that this grown man wants to dress up in a pair of pantyhose and call himself Chainsaw Charlie, while I find the idea a little bit ridiculous, I say to each his own. But as far as the New Age Outlaws, I think you've got yourselves in a situation that you're not prepared for. We're going to make your life a living hell while we're brutalizing you and abusing you. I just want you to know, I don't want you to consider it punishment for sins you've committed. Think of it as a chance to get to know each other. It'll be the Brutal Ball! Bang, bang!
This week in 1998, ECW had House Party 98 at the ECW Arena. One of the most violent matches ECW ever had, Sandman defeating Sabu in a Stairway to Hell match. During this match, Sabu had his jaw broken, and when you watch the match, you will actually see Bill Alfonso tape Sabu's jaw closed. Pretty tough motherfucker. 1 year later, ECW had their Guilty as Charged pay-per-view. Sid Vicious, making his ECW debut, pinned John Cronus. Main event had Taz defeating Shane Douglas to win the ECW World Heavyweight title. This ended Shane Douglas's fourth title reign, which ended, which lasted almost 13 months, a little over 13 months. Another memorable match from that card, just incredible, pinning Tommy Dreamer in a Stairway to Hell ladder match. Terry Funk came to ringside, hit Dreamer with a garbage can, blah, 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 blah. Rest is history. 1999, Monday Night Raw versus Monday Nitro. Couple of things went down that are a little memorable. At this time, Vince McMahon was, quote-unquote, training heavily to be part of the 1999 Royal Rumble. If you go watch Raw from this week, you'll actually see some of his training segments that are pretty intense. This week also was the in-ring debut of Gilbert. Do you remember who he faced that night? Luna Vachon. And you got to remember, Gilbert was already the light heavyweight champion, but he was wrestling always as Dwayne Gill. This was the first night that they actually satired Goldberg. And he came out as Gilbert. You know, they knocked on the door. You had the job squad holding little sparklers and stuff like that. Memorable moment. I don't think Goldberg was all that happy about it, but what could you expect? And this week as well, China won the corporate Royal Rumble match, eliminating Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon was distracted by Steve Austin. And if you watch that match again and you look closely at Vince McMahon going over the top rope, that man is lucky that he didn't crush his larynx. That's all I'm going to say. Go check it out. We fast forward to 2000. You might remember a week or two ago, a storyline where Mick Foley was fired. Well, at the beginning of this episode of Monday Night Raw, they did a segment where The Rock came out and he, along with the rest of the WWF roster, threatened to walk out of the company unless Mick Foley was reinstated. And he was, in fact, reinstated. And the main event from that night was Triple H, X-Pac, Road Dogg, and Billy Gunn versus Foley, The Rock, JBL, and Farouk, APA, an eight-man tag match. Well, you think, you know, feel-good moment, reinstate Mick Foley. Well, even though he was reinstated that night, his team lost the main event. And believe it or not, this was the final match that Mick Foley wrestled in the Mankind persona before his first retirement a few months later. So this was the beginning of, you know, I don't want to say retirement of Mick Foley, but he obviously his career was being, you know, toned back quite a bit at this time. It was beginning of the end. You know, he did wrestle for several years after that, but you could see this was the writing on the wall that he couldn't do it as long and as much as he wanted to in the past. That same night on Monday Nitro, infamous set of matches that took place. Jeff Jarrett wrestled and lost to Jimmy Snuka, Tito Santana, and George the Animal Steele. George Steele was in a bunkhouse brawl match. Tito Santana was in a dungeon match. Don't know why. Jimmy Snuka was in a steel cage match. And if you remember, Chris Benoit climbed to the top of the cage and did the flying headbutt onto Jeff Jarrett. So, and you know, I kid you not, anybody that, you know, remembers the Masked Maniac. You know, I used to do the shows with him. He was the promoter here in New York and Florida. He actually was involved in having Jimmy Snuka, Tito Santana, and George Steele brought to Nitro that night. He actually was instrumental of those guys showing up there. And in the main event, Bret Hart and Kevin Nash fought to a no contest. The reason why I mention this was Bret Hart's last match as he was forced to retire due to the concussion and the injury suffered in his match against Goldberg at Starrcade. Now, obviously, Bret Hart came back to WWE, had the match with Vince McMahon, but pretty much Bret Hart's career was over. This was his last match. And if you're curious for that night what the ratings were like, you know, you remember last week we talked about how the ratings were pretty freaking, you know, powerful in 1999 for both companies. Well, you go 1 year later, Raw that night did a 6.8 rating, and Nitro did a 3.5. Now, you know, 3.5 is still not bad. But when you go from fives to threes, and then ultimately within a year go to threes to ones, and you're out of business, it's a pretty big deal. But talking about out of business, we actually got some news this week in history about ECW and WCW. First, let's talk about ECW. This week in 01, ECW held a house show at the Pine Bluff Convention Center. This turned out to be the last ever event for ECW before it closed its doors. Fans, if you check out some old accounts of fans that were there, they believed that it was the end. A lot of wrestlers also believed it. There were events that were canceled. In fact, after the main event, which featured the Sandman versus Justin Credible, they hugged in the ring. The wrestlers came out. Atlas came out. Dreamer came out. They all thanked the fans. Everybody was cheering. They were clapping. There was some tears being shed in the ring. It was the end. And if you're curious of what the lineup was like that night, you had Nova versus Tom Marquez, Christian York and Joey Matthews versus the Hot Commodity, which was Easy Money and Julio De Niro, Tajiri versus Super Crazy, Danny Doring and Tommy Dreamer versus the FBI, C.W. Anderson versus Jack Victory, Michael Shane versus Oz, not that one, Prodigy versus Phoenix, Spike Dudley versus Rhino, and Justin Credible versus the Sandman. Now, the same week, it was announced that Eric Bischoff and Fusion announced their intent to acquire World Championship Wrestling. It was this week that they announced that they were going to be buying WCW from AOL Time Warner. This same week, WCW presented the Sin pay-per-view. Now, originally, the thought was that since Bischoff and Fusion were going to buy WCW, that this event would be the first pay-per-view under the Fusion banner. But unfortunately, literally a few days after this, Jamie Kellner pulled the rug over Fusion and Eric Bischoff. Deal went bad. Obviously, WCW would be sold to WWE and the rest is history. But what we will always remember around this time as well was the WCW Sin pay-per-view that took place this week in wrestling history. That event saw the final WCW match of Bill Goldberg's career and is also well, most known that night for that crazy injury that Sid Vicious suffered, the compound fracture to his leg. The whole match was a clusterfuck. It was Scott Steiner over Jeff Jarrett and Sid Vicious, a mystery opponent, which turned out to be Road Warrior Animal. The whole thing was just a clusterfuck. But what I will always remember from that night was the Monday Nitro following, because I swear to you, I remember doing my wrestling hotline at the time, and I think I have the archive of that hotline report in 2001. I got to put it on Patreon for everyone. I got to just research it from my old hard drive. But I remember Nitro showing the instant replay of his leg being broken over and over and over. I mean, it was just disturbing to see, but the amount of times that WCW repeated it, I remember the website showing it as well. It made me laugh. It turned into something comedic. And I know a lot of people at that time, they didn't want to laugh. It was a disgusting injury. But the way they kept showing it over and over and over again, I remember we expected to hear like funny music, Benny Hill music and stuff to it. It was horrendous. And they kept repeating it. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. 2003, believe it or not, the Brooklyn Brawler, Steve Lombardi, won a heavyweight title. He unfortunately only had it for a few minutes. He originally beat Johnny Swinger in Ontario, Canada to win the Border City Wrestling Can-Am heavyweight title. But because he cheated, they took away the belt and gave it back to Swinger. 2004 on SmackDown, we had John Cena defeating Rhino in the main event. I was going to play it, but it's kind of corny. You could watch it on the network if you want. But they did a segment where Paul Heyman was in the ring. So was Cena, and so was Chris Benoit. Chris Benoit put Paul Heyman in the sharpshooter. They were doing something that night with Ivory Soap, and John Cena brought a bar of Ivory Soap in the ring, made Paul Heyman lick it, made him bite it, made him eat it. You know, John Cena calling him a fat walrus. I don't think he called him a walrus that night, but he called him a fat slob. And he said, you know, Paul, don't spit it out. Everybody knows you swallow. I was going to play it. I thought it would be funny, humorous, but I don't know. It's not that because I'm a Paul Heyman fan, I don't want to play it. It just, I don't know. Audio-wise, it does no justice. If you want to see the segment, just look this week, 2004. 2005 at New Year's Revolution's pay-per-view, Shelton Benjamin defeated Maven in 5 seconds. And I believe to this date, that pay-per-view is the only pay-per-view that's ever been presented by WWE from Puerto Rico. I could be wrong. I have to do some research. Maybe another one did take place after that, but I'm pretty certain that event was the only one that ever took place in Puerto Rico. That same week on Raw, if you want to go check it out, it is pretty hot. Christy Hemme defeated Maria Kanellis in a lingerie pillow fight. 2006, SmackDown and Velocity are taped in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Batista on that show surrendered the World Heavyweight title due to a torn tricep that he suffered in a match with Mark Henry a couple of days earlier at a house show. Therefore, that night, they announced a 20-man battle royal to determine the new heavyweight champion. That battle royal was won by Kurt Angle. He won the vacated World Heavyweight title. The reason why it was a big deal was because Kurt Angle, I believe, was part of the Raw roster and won the SmackDown title. They also did a pretty wacky Piper's Pit that night. JBL and Jillian Hall were guests on Piper's Pit. Originally, the guest was supposed to be the Boogeyman. Boogeyman came out anyway, and he bit Jillian Hall's mole off her face. Yep. And if you listened to Breakfast Soup this week, I had mentioned that there was a moment this week in history where Randy Orton actually won a match. And as a result, Booker T got a title. Yeah, that actually was this week on SmackDown. What had happened was Chris Benoit was in the middle of a best of seven series against Booker T to win the vacated WWE United States Championship. Unfortunately, for match number seven, Booker T was injured. So Randy Orton filled in for Booker T. Randy Orton won the match. And because he won the match, that gave Booker T a 4-3 series win. So Booker T became the champion. And speaking of champions, last week I talked about how Edge was successful cashing in his Money in a Bank briefcase at New Year's Revolution to become the heavyweight title. He defeated John Cena in less than 2 minutes. Well, the following night, which is really this week in history, Monday Night Raw, Edge and Lita decided to celebrate in the ring by having sex. The live sex celebration took place this week in wrestling history. And you look back at it and you'd be surprised at the amount of people online that actually enjoyed the segment. I mean, look, Lita's hot and everything like that, but yes, it did make some people feel very uncomfortable. But you'd be surprised if you go look around how much of a positive that it got. You know, me, I thought it had no business being on, you know, my wrestling show. But you also have to admit that that night might arguably be the birth of the quote-unquote rated R superstar. You know, and, you know, we also forget that Ric Flair came out during the segment, got into it with Edge, got busted up. John Cena ended up giving the FU to Lita. I never bothered to look closely, but some people have said over the years that there was a nip slip on behalf of Lita during this segment, but figured I'd share with everyone this week in history, the live sex celebration. If you want to see a fun match, you're a fan of Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe. 11 years ago this week at TNA's Final Resolution, Kurt Angle defeated Samoa Joe in a 30-minute Iron Man match. It's a very good match, so you might want to check that out. 2008, the USA Network announced that Monday Night Raw will no longer be preempted because of the freaking dog show. You remember back in the day? I think newer fans never had to experience this, but every year, the USA Network would air the Westminster Dog Show at 9 p.m., and it was always on a Monday night every year that this happened. So once a year, we unfortunately did not get a chance to see WWE programming on Monday night in its regular time slot. Instead, they would air dogs. Well, 2008 was the final, you know, it was the announcement that it was no longer going to be preempted. So instead, they would air the dog show at the time, I think on CNBC. But just figured I'd share with everyone. That same week, it was stupid. It was dumb. A lot of people may have forgotten about it. We had on TV the mini Royal Rumble. It was Hornswoggle versus mini Mr. Kennedy, mini Mankind, mini Batista, and mini Kane. Yeah, there was only five people in the match. Great Khali came out. Not the mini Khali, but the actual Great Khali tried to beat up Hornswoggle. He was taken out by Fit Finlay. 2009, as part of WWE cutting back big time, they released Kevin Thorne, Bam Bealey, referee Jimmy Corderas, D'Lo Brown, Val Venus, Tim White, Matt Capitelli, referee Mickey Henson, even Vince McMahon's two limousine drivers were let go. And they also announced that they were going to be laying off 10% of their employment staff as well. So big things went down that time. Yeah, I got to go back to the archives of the DTKC show in 09. I don't remember WWE having like big time financial problems. I think they were just trying to trim the fat. But I got to go check that out. Also this week, in addition to that, it was the announcement that Steve Austin was going to headline the 2009 WWE Hall of Fame. This same week on SmackDown was the infamous pyrotechnics accident that occurred with Jeff Hardy came out for his match. If you've never seen it, go on YouTube. There's footage there. Jeff Hardy came out for his match. The pyros went off and they blew up in his face. People were wondering, was it real? Was it storyline? Some people were legitimately concerned. WWE obviously played off as a storyline on their website. They played off as real, but it was really storyline. A lot of people forget that I think the week before Jeff Hardy was involved in an auto accident, they were trying to make it that Jeff Hardy was accident prone. But it was very believable, though. I have to give WWE credit. I mean, was it tasteful to do something like that? Wasn't there a big-time tragedy not too long before that where a rock club, because of some pyro or something, that it caught fire and it killed like dozens of people? I remember watching it on the news. It could very well have not happened any time anywhere close to this. But I just, for some reason, I think of that nightclub incident, and I have a feeling that they were actually close together. But the way WWE did it, though, it was impressive. It really was. This week also, in 2009 on SmackDown, Victoria wrestled her last ever match for WWE. And with the women's first ever women's Royal Rumble match coming up, makes you wonder, is Victoria going to be invited back to be in that match? A lot of dissension between Victoria and WWE when she first left. But, you know, WWE has mentioned her over the last couple of years. So I think there's obviously some dissension still. But I don't know if it's to the point where they wouldn't bring her back, you know, to be in a match, something like this. Look, she could enter the match and get eliminated in 5 seconds. I mean, that's, you know, how it could go down. But I would think Victoria physically is able to perform, and it's going to be interesting to see if WWE has her part of the Royal Rumble match. 2010 on Raw, Shawn Michaels and Triple H defeated Chris Jericho and his special partner, Mike Tyson. And it didn't go down that clear cut. Go back and watch the match and you'll see how Mike Tyson basically, I guess you could say, cost Jericho the match. That same week, WWE released the following developmental talent: Chris the Bambi Killer, Dino Carter, Lennox McEnroe, Leroy Morgan, who is Max McGurk, the son of Mike McGurk, Lift Swainer, and Johnny Riggs, who actually requested his release, was granted it. 2011, Shawn Michaels was announced as the headliner for the WWE Hall of Fame Class of 11. Mike Adamley, that week, was arrested for DUI, but it was later learned that he was on medication for epilepsy. He was cleared of all charges. Now, 2011, the same week, Matt Hardy made his TNA debut at Genesis. The storyline at that time was that Rob Van Dam wanted to fight Hardy. Jeff Hardy was already part of TNA. Matt Hardy was not. So Eric Bischoff told Rob Van Dam, "You want to fight Hardy? You'll get Hardy. I hope you're happy." It ended up being Matt Hardy. He came out with a trench coat, his hair in corn rolls, had put on some weight. I remember one of my old Breakfast with Blasi intros, making fun of it, simulating vomiting. Remember, he's got corn rolls, he's fat. Remember that? Yeah, he didn't look all that great. You know, some people compared it as a cross between Raven and Tyler Rex. But Matt Hardy wasn't in the greatest of shape at that time. Look, the guy has turned it around. I mean, he don't even compare the two. But it was this week, 2011, Matt Hardy made his TNA debut. 2012, WWE announced that Edge and the Four Horsemen were going to be headlining the WWE Hall of Fame Class of 12. Brodus Clay, this week in 2012, made his debut on WWE television. And finally this week for 2012, Primo and Epico win the WWE tag titles at a house show in Oakland, California, defeating Evan Bourne and Kofi Kingston. Now, I know that may sound very familiar for a lot of you recently because I talked about that title change when we got into various house show title changes recently because AJ Styles had won the title at the Garden. This is something that I have said over the years is something that WWE should do more often. It might spark more people to go to house shows if they think that there's a greater chance a title could change. Now, even though WWE never said that these were related, I think they were common sense. The likely reason why this title change took place in California at a house show is because 2 days later on WWE's website, they announced Evan Bourne had failed the wellness program for a second time and as a result was suspended for 60 days. So there you go. This week, 2012. 1 year later, 2013, Mick Foley was announced that he was going to be part of the WWE Hall of Fame Class of 2013. 2013 also gave us the very last match ever between Rob Van Dam and Jerry Lynn. And that was at a TNA one-night-only pay-per-view. This was pretty much the retirement of Jerry Lynn. After the match, they hugged. Other wrestlers from the locker room came out. They saluted Jerry Lynn. And it was legit. Jerry Lynn was retiring at that time. And, you know, RVD versus Jerry Lynn is one of the greatest feuds of our generation. As far as, you know, may not have gotten the notoriety of others, but as far as competition in the ring, beautiful. You know, you think of Eddie Guerrero versus Dean Malenko, Rey Mysterio versus Psychosis. I put RVD versus Jerry Lynn right up there as well. 2013 also had a lawsuit end between TNA and WWE. Now, I'm going to read this word for word from a couple of websites that reported it at the time, just to give you an idea, because a name is going to pop up that those in the Northeast, those from USA Pro Wrestling, will remember this person clearly because I worked with him. In a document filed on January 15th, TNA advised the court that both sides, them and WWE, had agreed to cover their own legal costs and the suit had been withdrawn. There had been movement in the case after the court filed a permanent injunction against former WWE and TNA office worker Brian Wittenstein. Remember Brian with the clipboard, USA Pro Wrestling? Brian Wittenstein, that him, that Brian, and the other defendant in the case. The Chancery Court of Tennessee in Davidson County officially ordered an injunction against former TNA and WWE office staffer Brian Wittenstein on August 20th for Wittenstein's alleged role in the TNA lawsuit against him and WWE. The order demanded that Wittenstein return all information he downloaded from TNA onto a flash drive after leaving his employment there, not speaking of any TNA information to any third parties, including WWE, and not breach any agreements he had signed with TNA. Lawsuit was filed after WWE notified TNA that Wittenstein had handed over a flash drive containing confidential TNA documents, including contracts for talent. At the same time, Ric Flair informed TNA that he wanted a release from his deal and ordered to go back to WWE. Armed with those two situations, TNA felt WWE had targeted them and went on the offensive. Early on in the suit, WWE had a temporary injunction placed against them, requiring them to return any confidential TNA documents that were in possession. They were in possession of. WWE had already returned the material to TNA by the time the lawsuit was filed and presented evidence to the court that they had policed their own company email and file servers to prove that they had not maintained any of the confidential material for their own usage. Court was satisfied with that and released WWE from their injunction. Contrary to persistent rumors, at no time was WWE enjoined from hiring or negotiating with former TNA talents or TNA talents whose deals were expiring. Over the course of the lawsuit, the Ric Flair aspect of the case appeared to be moot, as WWE filed documents indicating that TNA had already released Ric Flair prior to filing the lawsuit. WWE claimed at the time they had no interest in hiring Ric Flair, who had made two appearances for the company since his TNA no-compete expired. TNA had been suing for interference with existing contracts, conversion, breach of contract, civil conspiracy, unfair competition, and violation of the Tennessee Uniform Trade Secrets Act. They were also suing Brian Wittenstein for breach of duty and loyalty and were seeking reimbursement of payments made to Wittenstein as part of their severance agreement, as well as their attorney fees and expenses. So that's pretty much what went down. Brian Wittenstein used to work for USA Pro Wrestling and Frank Goodman, Mass Maniac. In fact, when I got involved a little bit with USA Pro Wrestling, which was around, I'd say 2004, 2005, Brian Wittenstein was young. Was he maybe 20 years old? I mean, when he started working for Frank Goodman, I think he was like 17 years old. And he would always walk around with a clipboard. You know, he would tell when the wrestlers were to come out. And, you know, Brian wasn't a bad guy. I mean, he, you know, did well. But when he got the job for TNA and even, you know, got hired with WWE, we were all surprised because, number one, he was so young and really did not have, you know, that much experience as far as like a booker or anything like that. I don't want to use the term gopher, but he was more of like an assistant, a gopher. And, you know, there's been speculation over the years. Longtime listeners will remember we used to have a guy called Mr. Mystery who used to give us a lot of dirt and a lot of backstage stuff from TNA that no one else had. You go back to the early episodes of the DTKC show and the Minority Report. If you go to our website, DonTonyKevinCastle.com, and search Mr. Mystery, you will see show after show after show where we broke major things going on in TNA that no one else did. You know, I don't break news now. I mean, I like to be right. I'm an opinion show more than anything else. But obviously, when there are stories, I will verify things on my own. I'll contact my own sources. But I'm not, you know, a reporter. I don't go out looking to report news every single day. All right, kudos to everybody that does. But what I do here is different. But at that time, we weren't going to refuse the information. Mr. Mystery gave us crazy, crazy shit. And I'm not even going to bring up examples. But you go back then, you realize it. And it was funny because all the mainstream websites would not give us credit for anything, but we consider that a badge of honor. But over the years, a lot of people thought that Brian Wittenstein was Mr. Mystery. And for those that keep asking me that question, I still will refuse to answer it. So there you go. We're almost done, everyone. 2013, as I had mentioned earlier in the night, was the infamous moment that, 25, 30 minutes worth of moments between CM Punk and The Rock closing out Monday Night Raw. For everybody that wanted to enjoy their back and forth, here it is in its entirety. And then after it's done, I will read you what superstar Billy Graham had to say about it.
The time has come to tell you all something very personal. See, I keep my ear to the ground and I hear everything everybody says. And for the past year and a half, the words pipe bomb have been completely misunderstood and misused. It doesn't seem anybody in the universe understands what it means. Anybody in this company doesn't understand what a pipe bomb is. Basically, what a pipe bomb is in its truest form is the truth. It's honesty. You boil it down, and the essence of a pipe bomb is exactly what all of you lack, honesty. Seems the perception of me is somebody who is a little disgruntled, sat down on a stage in Las Vegas and aired his grievances and said, pipe bomb. I became the voice of the voiceless. And then maybe my ego was like a runaway train, and I suddenly bitched and moaned and complained about respect and how I didn't get enough of it. And then I turned my back on the people. Well, that's a lie. Don't be mistaken. I meant everything I said when I said it, except the part about ice cream. Because I look out here and the last thing any of you people need is more bars of ice cream. But I was shortchanged and I was disrespected. And sure, I could have just swallowed that bitter pill and accepted my position in the company like everybody else in the back. Or I could have left. Instead, I made a conscious decision. And I sold out. To you, I sold out. To me, I cashed in. See, I created this persona, this rebel, this anti-hero that you all love to cheer for, because I knew that you all love to cheer for your superheroes. Because here's the truth about Las Vegas. Here's the truth about the WWE, is that it doesn't matter if you're the best wrestler. It doesn't matter if you're the best talker. It doesn't matter if you're the best overall performer. It doesn't matter if you make the two clowns sitting to my left on commentary look like amateur hour. There is a glass ceiling and nobody is allowed to break it. That's the simple story of this place. The more popular you are, the more money you make. The more you people cheer for any given superstar, the more opportunities you're afforded. Why do you think a guy like John Cena, who has admittedly had the worst year of his career, gets title shot after title shot after title shot after title shot? Or why a lethal grappler, why a serious submission specialist like Daniel Bryan puts a smile on his face and saddles himself, belittles himself with catchphrases? Or why a 400-pound monster, Brodus Clay, soils his hands by touching your filthy, ugly little children to get in the ring so he can shuck and jive for you. Or why an invisible child, little Jimmy, is better positioned on the flagship show Monday Night Raw than a workhorse like Tyson Kidd. Look, they're doing it now. You're doing it now. You're falling for everything I say. You're playing into my hands. But this is the way it is. And this is the way you want it. Because this is the way you handle it. It's easy. It's saccharine. It's simple to digest because you people can't handle anything complicated. You people can't stomach anything interesting. This is the way it's been since the beginning of time. We're all here in the circus to entertain you. And nobody's ever been able to attain a modicum of success without you. Except for now. Until I showed up. I have become the most successful WWE champion of all time. Not of the modern era. Now, that's another little buzzword that somebody backstage wants you to say. They probably want to put it on a t-shirt. But that's the way you get noticed. You don't get noticed until you start to move a couple of t-shirts around here. If I competed in Bruno Sammartino's era, I'd have been champion for 20 years too. No, I'd have been champion for 30 years. Because wrestling one night a month in Madison Square Garden is easy. You never see a Hulk Hogan wrestle TLC matches against a superstar like Ryback. Because he had it easy. I wrestle physically demanding matches on free television week in and week out. So much that my 1 year equals 30 of theirs. And I have attained this success. Not because of you. I am successful not because of you. I am successful in spite of you. Now, I'm the most honest man in this building. I'm the most honest man in this company because everybody else has got the same old tired crybaby story. They'll come out here and they'll say, I do it for the people. I do it for all of you. Let's hear it for Tampa, Florida. Here's some honesty. I watched Roddy Piper smash a coconut over Jimmy Snuka's head, and I sure as hell didn't say, golly gee, I can't wait to go electrify the people of Tampa Bay, Florida. No, because I don't care about the people of Tampa Bay, Florida. There's good guys and there's bad guys in this world, and make no mistake about it, ladies and gentlemen, I am a bad, bad man. And I can freely admit it. But Ric Flair will come out here and he'll cry his 182-year eyes out and say, oh, I did it for all of you. Now they're wooing. Shawn Michaels can come out here and lose his smile and find his smile. But then in a tearful Hall of Fame speech, he'll say that his entire career was just to gain your acceptance. And then a man like Edge is forced to retire, and he'll say that he misses competing for people like you. Now, these people, these men are either weak or they're dishonest and they're liars. It's either one or the other. But I am neither weak or dishonest. I'm the best in the world. Types of people on this earth, those born to be in the spotlight and those born to pay to see the people in the spotlight. Ladies and gentlemen, there's winners and losers. Guess which one you are. You're born to pay to see champions like me. It's not the other way around. And I'll be the first guy to come out here and admit it. I'm honest. I have never, ever done this for any of you. There's superstars and there's nobodies. I am a superstar. You are all nobodies. And I'm a real superstar. Those real superstars, hell, if they're your friends, why don't they come out here and give you the millions and millions of dollars they earn? Why don't they line your pockets? Because that's not your position on earth.
I don't believe it.
I'm being told that we have to take a commercial break. I'm not done. Let me explain something to you. Let me explain something to everybody in the truck. We don't go to break when you want to go to break. We go to break when the champ wants to go to break. Listen up and understand something, because The Rock's going to come out here and he's going to talk a whole lot. But I will now tell you the most important thing you're going to hear tonight. You,
I can't wait to hear
from The Rock. Do not matter. You
heard enough from CM Punk.
Do not matter. You do not matter. None of you matter. What you want doesn't matter.
And we are back live on Monday Night Raw. CM Punk upset that we had to go to commercial break during his.
So I stand here on the first Raw of 2013, your WWE champion, and I promise you, in 1 year's time, I will stand in this ring on the first Raw of 2014 still. Your WWE champion. What fuels me is your constant disappointment and your self-appointed superheroes to be able to drag this title away from me. And now The Rock has come back, but it's not going to change the fact that I'm the WWE champion, and I'm not going to let The Rock tear down everything that I fought so hard to attain. No. Not at all. You know, in 2011, when I defeated Alberto Del Rio for this title at Madison Square Garden, I didn't just beat Alberto Del Rio. I beat the system. And every time after that, when I beat one of your superheroes, and I don't care if it was John Cena, Ryback, Chris Jericho, Kane, Big Show, Dolph Ziggler, any of the litany of superstars that I've defeated, I wasn't just beating them, I was beating all of you. And for 414 days, that's exactly what I've done. In your face, jerks, I have beaten you. I have stomped you out under my oppressive boot. And I'm going to do the same thing to The Rock, because I don't care if he's back. You all do not get to win. You are losers. You do not get to win. You do not.
The Rock had to hear it all. The Rock wanted to wait until you said everything you had to say. So The Rock knew exactly the kind of man he's dealing with at the Royal Rumble. And now it's become crystal clear to The Rock. You are straight up delusional. You keep mentioning that number 414. 414 days you've been WWE champion. That's incredible. Incredible. The real number, it ain't 414, Jack. The real number that haunts your dreams is 20. 20 excuses running around your mind right now. 20 hairs standing up on your straight-edge scrotum. Because you know, in 20 days, you're going to be defending that WWE Championship against The Rock, which means in 20 days, you know, The Rock knows, they know. In 20 days, time's up. You want a change. You wanted a revolution. You say that when you became WWE champion, you rejected the people. No. The people rejected you. You talked about change. You couldn't do it. You talked about revolution. You couldn't do it. You came out and you promised everybody ice cream bars. Ice cream bars for everybody. And you couldn't even do that. You couldn't provide ice cream if the Dairy Queen, Carvel, and Cookie Puss drove an ice cream truck straight up your ass. I want you to listen to something. Listen to something, punk. Listen. That's voices. Voices. You claim to be the voice of the voiceless, but that's a bunch of hot garbage, because here in the WWE universe, there ain't no such thing as the voiceless. They have voices. And they love to use their voice. They use it every single night. Every night they use their voice. As a matter of fact, they know something special is getting ready to happen right now. They're going to use their voice. They're going to chant the loudest chant you have ever heard. They're going to chant. They're going to chant something that is going to follow you for the rest of your life. They're going to chant. They're not going to chant respect. They're not going to chant best in the world. They're going to chant exactly what you are. In 3 seconds, they're going to chant, Cookie Puss, Cookie Puss.
Puppets that you are. He got you chanting about ice cream the same way I did a year and a half ago. Congratulations. They still don't get to win. You don't get to win.
They don't get to win. They don't get to win. Oh, they've already won. They've already won. See, that's something you fail to realize. They've already won. They won the moment The Rock woke up this morning at 4 a.m. The Rock woke up this morning at 4 a.m. He sent out his early morning tweet to the world. Then The Rock ate his famous pancakes. Then The Rock went to the gym, clanging and banging and clanging and banging. Then The Rock got in his pickup truck and he drove up right up I-75, right through Alligator Alley. Right through Alligator Alley, so The Rock could stand right here in the middle of this ring, in front of you, in front of them, in front of the world, and proudly say, finally, The Rock has come back to Tampa! Well, you see, punk, it's not just that The Rock is back. No, it's why The Rock is back. Here's why The Rock is back, for 3 reasons. The Rock is back to entertain them. The Rock is back to stop you. And after 10 long years, The Rock is back to win that. The Rock has watched the show every Monday Night Raw, watching you. You're deceiving. You're backpedaling. You're lying. The Rock would watch the TV and he'd scream at the TV, good God Almighty, somebody tell this man they respect him just so he'd shut his punk ass up. And while you're at it, somebody show this man a doctor. Is there a doctor in the house? Because a man who claims that he's straight edge, he's running around here looking exactly like Popeye on crack. Look at you, punk eye, the crackhead. All you need right now is a little thing in your mouth. Little toot toot. CM Punk. CM Punk, you have one of the most creative and innovative minds in the history of the WWE. The Rock knows it. You fail to use it. You became WWE champion, and you also became the biggest jerk the world has ever seen. The Rock can look you in the eye and tell you this with all passion and with all heart. When The Rock is here, don't you ever say the people don't matter. They matter. They've always mattered. You're the one that doesn't matter.
Oh, I matter. I'm the most successful
WWE. It doesn't matter if you matter. The only thing that matters is that you understand, you get it straight in your head, that at Royal Rumble, there ain't no way. And The Rock means no way you're going to stop The Rock from becoming WWE champion.
Unlike a lot of people, I'm glad you're back. I don't care what your schedule is. I don't care if you work here 16 days a year, 365 days a year. You could be Santa Claus and have his schedule. You could one day a year. I'll still kick your ass. I don't care how many movies you film every year. I know how hard that schedule probably is, but every time you come back, whenever you decide to grace us with your presence, I'm gonna kick your ass. Because this isn't Candyland. I'm like nobody you've ever faced before. You can make fun of the color of my t-shirt, and you can talk about pie, and you can sing songs, and you can rhyme, and you can do your tired, lame-ass shtick. I just want you to know that come Royal Rumble, and you have about 3 weeks to realize this, I'm gonna kick your ass, because I'm the best in the world. I'm the best thing going today. I'm the best guy you've ever stepped foot in the ring with. And you need to understand, congratulations, Rock. You just graduated from the kiddie table, but you just bit off more than you can chew. You're playing Little League with your little insults and your rhymes and your millions and millions and your finallys, and I'm in the big leagues, and I'm swinging for the fence. You need to understand that your little jabs and your insults, it's all kiddie games. You can't leave a mark on the champ's face. Come Royal Rumble. Understand, when you step in the ring, your arms are just too short to box with God.
You may think that The Rock is boxing with God. But The Rock knows for a fact you are going one-on-one with the Great One. Don't you think for one single solitary second that The Rock doesn't know how bad you are, how dangerous you are, how tough you are. The Rock knows that. 414 days, The Rock knows. The last time we were in the middle of this ring, you hit The Rock with a GTS and you knocked him out cold, cold as a block of ice. The Rock didn't forget it. You hurt The Rock. You embarrassed The Rock. He said it before. He'll say it again. In 20 days, time's up. But here's the thing. This is what The Rock wants you to do from now until then. The Rock wants you to go home and think about the next 20 days. As a matter of fact, The Rock wants you to go home and look in the mirror. As a matter of fact, The Rock wants you to go home, look in the mirror, and strip naked. That's what The Rock wants you to do. Go ahead and look at yourself. Don't concentrate on your cookie puss. Turn around and look at your backside. Turn around, look at your backside, and let's try and find a small space on this body that's not covered in ugly tattoos, because The Rock wants you to get two more tattoos, some more tattoos. Here's the thing. Go ahead. On your left butt cheek, The Rock wants you to get a tattoo of a big fat M&M. And then add a Snickers, a Milky Way, a Mounds. You can't have an Almond Joy, because unlike you, Almond Joys actually have nuts. And then on your right butt cheek, this is what The Rock wants you to do. The Rock wants you to get the tattoo of The Rock's size 15 shoe. So you will have a lifetime reminder of how badly The Rock is going to kick your candy ass at Royal Rumble.
Oh, yeah! Rock bottom! Rock bottom! Amen! Oh, rock bottom!
Following this segment on Monday Night Raw, superstar Billy Graham said the following. I watched the last hour of WWE Raw last night. It was the worst excuse for a show I have ever seen. My agent Scott is tight with legendary world champion Bruno Sammartino. Scott had told me that WWE had been calling Bruno regularly, begging him to go into the Hall of Fame. Bruno has been polite, but has always said no thank you. Tonight on Raw, for the last 45 minutes of the show, all they did was have CM Punk talk, talk, and more talk. The killer line came when Vince had Punk putting over his 314 straight days as world champ, and then said, and I quote, "You had people like Bruno Sammartino only wrestled in Madison Square Garden, only wrestled once a month. This was by far the biggest put down of Bruno ever. Why would WWE have CM Punk say that about someone that they have been begging to go into the Hall of Fame for untold years?" When that teenager-looking CM Punk made that statement, he was also talking about me, Ivan Koloff, Stan Hansen, etc. Find a rerun and listen closely and answer me this on my Facebook friends. How can they justify putting down a real icon like this and not get called out on it? Any news sites could quote me on my statement below. CM Punk, I have lost all respect for you for not saying no to the writers of the WWE for saying Bruno Sammartino only wrestled once a month in Madison Square Garden. You talk about one of the greatest icons ever in pro wrestling like he was a jobber. You should be ashamed of yourself to not only have the self-dignity to say no to the writers on that line. That line you delivered indicates that I am a big loser like Bruno as well and insults me as I wrestled in the same era as Bruno. This only confirms more that I want my name out of the WWE Hall of Fame. How many monthly sellouts have you yourself drawn in Madison Square Garden? Not a pay-per-view or the Raw TV show. Quit trash-talking about Bruno. It's an insult to him and all the wrestlers of his era, including myself. Superstar Billy Graham. Chris Jericho's response on Twitter? Plain and simple. Dear Superstar Billy Graham, shut the hell up. Stop being such a mark. Your pal, Chris Jericho. 2014, Daniel Bryan broke free from the Wyatt family. I remember not too long ago, we talked on the history segment of Daniel Bryan joining the Wyatt family. Well, this week, he actually broke free. If you remember, he and Bray Wyatt lost to the Usos in a steel cage match. Daniel Bryan then went on the attack against Bray Wyatt. Crowd went bananas for it. I watched the footage again this week. It was a cool moment, even though I remember at that time, we were all confused why they put Daniel Bryan in the Wyatt family as far as storyline. It just didn't feel right. Let's start wrapping this up. 2014, on Monday Night Raw, Randy Orton attacked John Cena's father, who was sitting at ringside. The only thing I always remember from that segment was, I think it was family members, right next to Cena's father, laughing during the segment. Totally horrendous. Randy Orton should have gave that fucking woman the RKO. We also had a fun match that night. Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins defeating CM Punk and the New Age Outlaws. New Age Outlaws actually turned on CM Punk that night. That same week, we were surprised to find out Ultimate Warrior was going to be the headliner for the WWE Hall of Fame. 2015, Randy Savage was announced to be headlining the WWE Hall of Fame. And with all these Hall of Fame announcements that took place this week in history, you would have thought by now, or at least the January 15th edition of Raw, that they would announce someone. And I know a lot of you are going to say, ah, they're just waiting for Raw 25. I get it. But it's not necessary, but you know, I guess it'll be cool. Hey, maybe we'll find out that Undertaker is going to be headlining Hall of Fame this year. Don't hold me on it. I'm just saying. 2016, Sting was announced as the headliner for the WWE Hall of Fame. And during that night, 2016, there was an in-ring segment between the Usos and Chris Jericho. And, you know, this just goes to show you that people always have race on their minds. I saw recently there was, you know, there was a clothing store that said biggest gorilla in the jungle. You know, it's a phrase. They had a black kid wearing the shirt. Right away, people are triggered. Racism, racism. The mother of the kid told everybody, lighten the fuck up. It wasn't meant to be racist, not racist. Stop thinking everything was racist. Well, 2 years ago, to set up a match between the New Day versus the Usos with Chris Jericho, Chris Jericho made this little blurb about the Usos.
Now, I might not have wrestling gear on, but here's what I propose to you. How about we have a match here tonight with Kofi Kingston and Big E? He's got an E for a name, Big E. And in their corner, Javier Woods against the Usos right here. My Back of the Bus Brothers right here.
Back of the Bus Brothers. Right away, some people triggered. Rosa Parks, how could you say that? Usos. Well, they obviously clarified it later on because Back of the Bus. Now, look, I'm not going to get into the whole thing. The clip is still on TV Trax's channel. All you got to do is search Don Tony, Back of the Bus, and you could hear it. But basically, Back of the Bus Brothers is a phrase for the guys that tour, that sit on the back of the bus and they play cards and they goof around. In fact, I even think 2 years ago, the Usos posted a photo on their Twitter of Jericho hanging out with the Usos on the back of the bus playing cards. So in no way, shape, or form was that meant to be racist, but some people took it the wrong way. And luckily, it got cleared up almost immediately. Thank God. And you know, before we close it out, can't believe it's already 1 year. 1 year ago this week, Tyler Bate defeats Pete Dunne to become the first ever WWE UK champion. Not too bad. Can't believe it's already a year gone by. Wow. The following are celebrating birthdays this week, but are no longer with us. Bearcat Wright, Pez Watley, Gory Guerrero, Don McGee, Eddie Graham, Luna Vachon, Big Dick Dudley, Tommy Gilbert, Billy Firehawk, and John Cronus. Happy birthday also to Abdullah the Butcher, who turned 77, Strong Kobayashi, 74, Colonel DeBeer, 73, Bruce Hart, 68, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Scott Casey, and B. Brian Blair all turned 64, Ranger Ross turned 63, Jerry Estrada, 60, Negro Casas, 58, Volano number 5, Tony Puccio and the Punisher turned 56, Ernest the Cat Miller, 54, Silver King, Gene Snitsky, Shane McMahon, and Buff Bagwell all turned 48. Brian Christopher turns 46. Magnum Tokyo, 45. Donovan Morgan and Todd Grisham turn 42. Tamina Snuka turns 40. And King Mo, Chrissy Vane, Shad Gaspard turn 37. Mason Ryan, 36. Matt Riddle, 32. VSK and Kelly Kelly turn 31. And finally, Ruby Riott turn 27. Notable deaths this week. Count Billy Varga passed away at age 94. Mae Young died this week at age 90 in history. The Wolfman at age 80. Rapid Ricky Romero at age 74. Jimmy Superfly Snuka Jack Barnes at age 73. Bobby Fuller at age 70. Coco Samoa, age 62. MS1 and Rex King died this week in history at age 55. Hillbilly Cousin Jr. at age 48, El Texano at age 47, and last but not least, Oyama Kato died at age 42. And with that said, we are done. I hope you enjoyed this week in wrestling history. Don't forget, follow me on Twitter, at DonTonyD. The website, DonTony.com. If you like what we do and you can't get enough of it, please consider signing up on our Patreon page. Helps pay the bills. Patreon.com/DonTony. For everybody who's been asking that has not signed up on Patreon, if they could get a little sample of the podcast that we do there. This week, I posted a 2.5-hour episode of Breakfast Soup that Mish and I did this past Wednesday. If you have not downloaded it yet, please do so. We talked about so much shit, wrestling and non-wrestling wise, and it's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. So go check that out. And that's it. So I hope you enjoyed this again. I'll be back next Monday, the 22nd of January, with your next edition of This Week in Wrestling History. Take care, everyone. Be well. Ciao.